Today we're beginning here on the top of Tzadi Amud Aleph. The Gemara is still attempting, at least the discussion that is going on between Rabba and Rav Chista, Rav Chista's opinion when it says, Lo asa v'lo klum, with regards to Truma, which means that Lo asa kol ikar, he did nothing. Rabba challenged Rav Chista and says, where do you see that the Chachamim have the power to be Oker Dovar Min HaTorah? So that's the key question that is being presented by Rabba to Rav Chista. And Rav Chista is trying to bring proof to the fact that we find in other places such a concept that you are Oker Davar Min HaTorah. So we had our Mishnah, that's why this is found in our Sugya, because Avlad Mamzer, by the second husband, who she's not married to, the Chachamim, where Magdir, the child, is being a Mamzer. And how can they allow him, who's a regular Yisrael, to go marry a Mamzeret? The answer of the Gemara is, no, he's only a Mamzer Midrabanan, he's not a Mamzer Midoraito. Then we moved on to the Yerusha of a husband of his wife, who's a Ktana. And over there, again, the Chachamim were Oker Davar Min HaTorah, because it really belongs to her father, and they gave it to the husband. So there, the Gemara invoked the principle of Hefker Beit Din Hefker. And then we saw, with regards to Tumat HaKohen, that there it was talking about Meit Mitzvah. And with regards to Truma, we're only talking about Truma Derabanan. Now the Gemara is going to spend today going through other examples of where the Chachamim were Oker Davar Min HaTorah, and Rav Chista is trying to bring proof to the fact that there is a precedent for what he is saying over here. So Tashma, Achal Trumat Me'ah. He ate Trumat Me'ah. So there are two problems with Trumat Me'ah. The first is that he's a Zar, and he's eating Truma. So that's the first problem. The second problem is that it's Tme'ah, which means it's even problematic for a Kohen to eat it. And that Trumat Me'ah is not valuable. You can't eat it. You just can burn it. That's the only thing you can do with it. So now, Mishalim, Chulin Teorim. You're supposed to pay back in Chulin Teorim. The way that it works with regards to Truma is that if a Zar eats Truma, he has to pay back 1 1/5. But when he pays back the 1 1/5, he doesn't just pay monetary compensation. He has to pay back in fruits of a like kind of things that could be Truma. And then he gives them to the Kohen, and then they turn Kodesh. They become Kodesh like Truma when he gives it to the Kohen. Ra'ui liot Kodesh. And then when he gives it to the Kohen, it takes on a Shem Truma then at that point, because he's making compensation for what was otherwise Truma. So now the individual over here ate Truma Tmeah. So as far as what he ate, in terms of monetary value, he didn't eat something that was worth a lot, but he has a problem because, number one, he's a Zar. So he has an issue in terms of eating the Truma. And number two is, he's got to pay, not monetary compensation, he's got to pay in like. He's got to pay fruits or grains, whatever that he was that he took from the Kohen. Tosfot already raises the issue in terms of, why isn't this kamlei demirabi minei, which is that anytime you involve a death penalty, we don't have compensation. So there, the Gemara says that only applies to death penalties that involve the Beit Din. So as far as that's concerned, it wouldn't be an issue over here, except there is an opinion from Nechunya ben Akano who thinks that it applies even to karet. That even by chiyuvei karet, emitim umishalmim. Person is not put to death and pays monetary compensation at the same time. So the Gemara deals with examples like where a person is in violation of Shabbat at the same time that he steals from someone. He took does hotza'ah from the Shuta Balim into the Shuta Rabim. So he's not only stealing at that point in time, but he's also violating Shabbat because of hotza'ah from Shuta Yachid to Shuta Rabim. So in that case, he will only face the death penalty for Shabbat. He will not have to make compensation because they happen simultaneously, and it's kamlei derabim minei. So Rabbi Yechoniah ben Akana says that also applies by karet. The onus for eating truma is mita bidei shemaim. So now there are deot, I believe, that Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana, who says by karet there is kamla derabim, and they would also say that by mita bidei shemaim. And therefore over here, why don't we say kamla derabim? Why is he making compensation and facing a death penalty of mita bidei shemaim? So Tosafot answers that the compensation over here, even though it's guided by monetary value or like kind of fruits, grains, whatever it is that you ate, nevertheless, it's brought for kapara and not for compensation. So in cases where it's not compensation, but rather kapara, it's not waived by kamla derabi minei, and therefore that's why over here he's going to pay, despite the fact that he's chaya mita bidei shemayim. Now, he has to give chulin torim. Shileim chulim tmeim. If instead, he paid with chulin tmeim. Simchos omer mishum rabbi meir, Bishogeg tashlumav tashlumim, b'mezid ein tashlumav tashlumim. B'shogeg, it works. If he does it b'mezid, it does not work. But chachamim amrim echad zeh ve'echad zeh, whether he does it b'shogeg or mezid, tashlumav tashlumim, that his payment counts, v'chozeru mishalem chulin torin, and then he has to go back and pay again with chulin torin. What's the problem with paying with chulin tmeim? If he pays with chulin tmeim are totally fine. But once you give it to the kohen, it's going to turn into truma. And when it turns into truma, now he has truma tmeya. So he's back, you're giving him something that is worthless, in a sense, because you can't eat it, and it's just going to be burnt. So here, even though he ate truma tmeya, the requirement is that he replaces it with chulin tehorin, which will be edible and usable by the kohen. Instead, he went ahead and gave chulin tmeim. So when he gave chulin tmeim, then it's going to turn into truma tmeya, even though it'll be the same thing that he ate. Nevertheless, he is not paying what the requirement is. The requirement is chulin tehorim. All right, the Gemara is going to say chosurei mechzera at some point here in the Gemara, which is that the Braita is missing some key words here. But just where we are in the Braita right now is a huge machloket rishonim as to the statement of Sumchus. Sumchus said, b'shogeg, it works. B'mezid, it doesn't work. What is the shogeg and mezid referencing? The way that Rashi explains it, the way that Tosafot favors explaining it, is it's talking about the tashlumim, when he pays it. If he unintentionally paid with chulin tmein, then Sumchus says, tashlumav tashlumim, it goes through. On the other hand, if he pays intentionally with chulin tmein, Sumchus says that it doesn't go through, and we say that it's nothing. It's as if nothing happened. It's if he did nothing and he's got to pay again. The Chachamim say it doesn't matter if he pays Shogeg or Mezid, he's paying with Chulin Tmein. It goes through, it's effective, but he's going to have to pay again. He's going to have to pay a second time because of the fact that he gave Chulin Tmein instead of Chulin Torin. So that's the one way to learn it. But there are many Rishonim, including the Rivan, over here quoted by Tosafot, that says the Shogeg and Mezid here is that he ate the Truma b'Shogeg or he ate the Truma b'Mezid. So did he consume this truma tmeya bishogeg, or did he consume this truma tmeya b'mezid? Now, that's not such a simple thing, because the requirement for our compensation and the one and the fifth only happens when you eat truma bishogeg. That's only true when you eat a bishogeg. When you eat a b'mezid, you can't do that. You can't attain that kapara, and you're not allowed to pay in. You only pay in when it's a din and shogeg. So what the Rivan and others explain is, it's tormented. When he does a bishogeg, he has to replace it, and that's the kapara to pay in like. But b'mezid, even though the Torah doesn't demand it from the side of kapara, you still stole money from the kohen. And you have to replace the monetary value of what you took from the kohen. And that's what he's giving. He's giving the chulin tmein over here in order to replace the value. All right, so that machloket about what the mezid and shogeg is about is important later on in the Gemara. Because later on in the Gemara, the Rivan's interpretation becomes much easier. And that's why he is using a difficult explanation here to make the Gemara further on much easier. Rashi and Tosafot say his explanation here is difficult, so they come with a simpler explanation over here, but they're going to face a hurdle later on in the Gemara. So right now what we have, and this is, it's obvious from here, what the question is, or why Rav Chista is bringing this as a proof, is because Rabbi Meir says that despite the fact that Minat Torah, his Tashlamim should work, nevertheless, Sumchus, the name Rabbi Meir, is saying, it's nothing. He's reversing what otherwise would have been considered Minat Torah as Truma. So that's where the question derives from, but we first of all have to figure out what's going on in this Braita. So then the Gemara moves on, Vavinamba. And Beis Mezid ain't Tashlumav Tashlumim. So the Gemara says, on that, we queried, or the Gemara tried to understand. If he intentionally paid with Chulin Tmeim, we say that it doesn't work. Ain't Tashlumav Tashlumim. Tavo ala bracha. He should get a bracha for what he's doing. He ate something that was not ro'oi b'mei tumato. And again, he's paying him something that is ro'oi b'mei tumato. So I'll use the Rivan's explanation because this is where the Rivan shines. This is why his explanation is much easier. We said before that the Rivan says the mezid and shogeg have to do with eating. If he ate the shogeg, then he's under the Torah law that he has to replace the items. So if he replaces them with chulim tmeim, they become truma tmeya, and he basically compensated exactly what he took away. He gave back, even though that's not what the Torah demanded, but he gave back something equal value. If he does it b'mezid, we're saying it doesn't work at all. According to the Rivan, b'mezid, the Torah doesn't have this requirement of giving in like and paying in kind with the same fruits. All he had to do was give compensation to the kohen for taking the truma. In that case, the item doesn't change into truma. It stays chulim. So when he gives him chulin tmeim, the kohen is actually in a better position. Before, all the kohen had was truma tmeya. Now he's giving them chulim tameim, which the kohen can use. Chulim tameim, he may not eat it when he's tahor, but when he's tamei, he can eat it. Truma tameya, even when he's tamei, he can't eat it. So that's what it means, tovah ala bracha. He gave him something better. He gave back the kohen something that's worth more than he took from the kohen. So why are you telling me when he does a bit mezid, you pull it and say it's not worth anything? Doesn't make any sense. Because tovah ala bracha, he did something beneficial to the kohen. Now according to Rashi, and Rashi asks it himself over here already, according to Rashi and Tosafot, whose explanation is, shogeg and mezid has to do with the tashlumim, what's the difference? He ate his shogeg, he's required by the Torah to pay in kind, with the truma, he gives it to him, it turns into truma. Whether he did it b'shogeg or b'mezid, it's going to turn into truma tmeya. So why tavo la bracha? What did he do that was so much better? So some explain, alkalav the tashlumim nasim truma, lo chazile b'mei truma, even though as Rashi says, now when he gives him it, it's going to turn into truma, it's not roi, hamil tashlumim alim ikavein. His intention when he gave him chulin tmein was to make a full payment. And to make a real payment. So even though in the end the Kohen ends up with the same item, which is Trumat Tmeyah, nevertheless, when he gave Chulin Tmeyim, assuming that that would be good compensation to make whole the Kohen. And so Tovah LaBracha, he didn't do anything worse, he didn't ruin anything, so it should be fine. Others suggest that when he gave it, it was Chulin Tmeyim. It's only when it comes to the hand of the Kohen that it turns into Trumat Tmeyah. So as far as he's concerned, he gave him something that was good. Okay, when it gets to the hand of the Kohen, it turns into Trumat. But that wasn't his doing. That's something that happens mamela. That happens automatically. Tosafot over here suggests that the reason that it works, or why I say tavala bracha, is because he's losing money. He's paying out something that's worth more than, had he compensated him in trumat me'ah, for instance, had he given him back trumat me'ah, you could buy trumat me'ah on the market for nothing. So he could have replaced it with trumat me'ah. Instead, he's paying him chulin tmeim, which costs much more money to buy. So in terms of his out-of-pocket expenses, he's given up a lot more than what he ate. So therefore, it should be tavola bracha. That's the way Rashi and Tosafot explain it when they explain that at the Shogig and the Mezid over here. So Gemara says, this braita doesn't make any sense. Why are you forfeiting his right to pay the Mezid if he's doing something that's even better than we started with? So Gemara says, So then Rova responds to this, and some say without attribution, it was responded to. Kasure mechsera. This braita is missing some words here, and now we'll clarify everything here, which is v'halchiktani. This is what the braita said: Achal trumat me'ah mishalem koldu. If he eats trumat me'ah, he can pay back any way he wants. He can pay back with chulin torin. He can pay back with chulin tmein. Either way, he's not causing the kohen any loss because him torim tavola bracha. He gives him tmein. He's taking a bigger out-of-pocket loss, but the kohen is no worse off. He has trumat me'ah back again. He doesn't have anything worse than he had before, so that's fine. But achal trumat Torah, this is where the machloket is. V'eit trumat Torah, mishalem chulin torin. He's supposed to pay back with chulin torin. Shilem chulin tmeim. If instead he paid with chulin tmeim, there, simchus omer mishum rabbi meir, bishul gave tashlumav tashlumim. He did it unintentionally, all right, we're not going to penalize him. Even though now the kohen ends up worse off. Because before the kohen had trumat Torah, now he's going to end up with trumat tmeyah. But it was unintentional, so we're going to let it go through. B'mezid, if he does it intentionally, ain't tashlumav tashlumim. Then we don't let it go through, because he's really doing something that hurts the kohen here, seriously. And if he intentionally gives chulin tmeim, we're going to penalize him for paying in trumat tmeyah instead of trumat teorah, because he's giving him chulin tmeim that's going to turn into trumat tmeyah instead of chulin torin, then it will turn into trumat teorah. But the chachamim say, chachamim are mim ben b'shogeg ben b'mezid tashlumav tashlumim. Whether he does it b'mezid or shogeg, his payment goes through. V'chozer mishalem chulin torin. And then he's going back and he's got to do it right. Whether shogeg or mezid, he's got to do it right. He's got to rectify what he did wrong here. And he's got to pay in. Now, Tosafot points out, there is a machlokin in the Gemara Pesachim with regards to the payment of this truma, when you do this payment in kind. Does this payment in kind have to equal quantitatively what you ate? Or does it have to eat value-wise what you ate? So when you go to replace the item that you took and you ate and you're paying in kind with fruits or vegetables, do you have to make it equal up to the value that you took or you ate? Or does it simply mean if you ate five figs, you give them five figs and you're all set, even if the value has changed in the interim? So Tosafot says, according to the one who says that you pay back in damim, in value, then over here the guy shortchanged him. Originally this guy, he had truma Torah, which is worth something. It's not worth a lot because only kohanim can eat it, but it's still worth something because it can be eaten by the kohanim. In the end, he gives him chulim tmeim, which turned into trumat tmeah. That is significantly lower value. So he didn't replace the damim that he took. So Tosafot over here says, you know what he did? He paid him huge quantities of Trumat Tmeyar, Chulin Tmein, that will equal the value of the Trumat Torah that he ate. In order to make it, that it comes out an equal value. And that's how we get it to be equal in Damim. Alright, but now, as Tosfos said, if he paid him full value, then why are we penalizing him? If he paid him so much Trumat Tmeyar that it's equal to the Trumat Torah, then why is he penalized? He did what he was supposed to do in the end, he gave him full value. So he says, because Trumat Torah is still more useful, has more utility, it's worth more money, if he needs to sell it, people will buy it quicker. To sell Trumat Tmeyar is much harder than to sell Trumat Torah. So you gave him something that's much less liquid, and something that's much more difficult to use. So even though technically you gave him the full value, we're still going to penalize you because you caused the kohen extra stress, undue difficulties, because he has to deal with this Trumat Tmeyar instead of Trumat Torah. Yeah. As far as the Torah is concerned, whatever he paid is a good payment, and it goes to the kohen and turns into Trumat Tmeyar. The kohen loses out. The Chachamim came in and said, even though now that you caused that loss to the Kohen, we're going to penalize you and force you to pay in again because we don't want the Kohen to lose out. Min HaTorah, you're right. Min HaTorah, you would say, because you paid in Chulin Tmein and it works, Min HaTorah. But it's to the detriment of the Kohen. Now he has Trumat Tmein instead of Trumat Torah. So the Chachamim came in and put a stopgap measure in which says, we're not going to let you get away with that. We're going to force you to make up the difference to the Kohen. But you have to pay out again in Chulin Torin. That's the Knas that the Chachamim had on. But the question here, and of course, is according to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that when you do a mezid, everything falls apart, becomes a zero. That's not, the Torah says it's good. And now the Chachamim came and say that it's nothing. How can they do that? That's the basic question over here. So now here comes the question after we figured all of this out. So over here, it's clear that the payment works. When he pays Chulin Tmein, it works. So then, the Kohen goes ahead and uses this Trumat Tmeyah to marry a woman. It's worth a pruta. He goes ahead and he says, Hariyat Nikudesh Libi Trumat Tmeyah Zo. This Chulin Tmeyin that the Israel paid back to the Kohen could take that and use that to be Mekadesh Nisha, which tells us that Midoraita, it's his money, it worked. Ve'omor Rabbanon Ein Tashlumav Tashlumim. All of a sudden the Chachamim say that, no, the payment doesn't go through, you have to give it back. Because Sharina Neshit Ish Le'alma. If he really did marry a woman with this, and then the Chachamim forfeit it back and say that the whole thing was problematic, goes back to the owner, he's got to pay again, but everything was a zero, then what are we going to do? We're going to say that he wasn't married to this woman. Now, if he's not married to this woman, then she's going to go off and get married to someone else. Meantime, in a Torah, it was his money, he did get married to this woman, now she's an Eshet Ish. So the Chachamim are Oker Davar Min HaTorah, which means it has serious consequences in terms of being Oker Davar Min HaTorah. So it says, Ma'in Tashlumav Tashlumim, Dikama Rabbi Meir. What does it mean that it's not a good payment? And he has to make another payment that Rabbi Meir says. That he has to pay again. Not that we take away what he paid in originally, but we just force him to pay again. So what's the obvious question that comes out of that? How is he different than the Chachamim now? That's exactly what the Chachamim said. The Chachamim said it counts as a payment and you have to pay again. So now you're telling me that's what Rabbi Meir meant also? Rabbi Meir is saying, oh, it counts as a payment, but you got to pay again. Then what's the difference? So Amar Abacha Breid Ravika, Kansu Shogeg Atu Mazid Ika Benayu. The difference is between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir is about the din in Shogeg. Rabbi Meir says by Shogeg, Tashlumav Tashlumim, that it's full payment and he doesn't have to do any more. Everything's clear. He paid Chulin Tmeim, it was wrong, but he did it unintentionally, we let it go. If he did it intentionally, then we say his payment doesn't count, meaning towards the fact that he is now Yotzei, he has to go and pay again, but it still remains Mamon of the Kohen. The Kohen keeps it. And he's got to pay again. Whereas the Chachamim say, whether it's Shogeg or Mezid, the payment counts, and he's got to pay again. So as far as Mezid is concerned, you're right. As far as Mezid is concerned, the payment stays with him, the original Chulin Tmeim, and he's got to pay with Chulin Torim, and that's the penalty. That he gave him Chulin Tmeim. Now he has to pay him out Chulin Torim, and everybody agrees to that. Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Where do they argue? Well, he did it unintentionally. Well, he unintentionally made a payment of Chulin Tmeim. In that case, that's where they're arguing here. Which is that Rabbi Meir believes then, if he did it unintentionally, we're not going to penalize him. It works Min HaTorah, and we're going to let him go, even though he caused the Kohen a loss. But nevertheless, it works Min HaTorah, and we'll let it go because it was unintentional. Rabbi Meir says, no, even unintentionally, we're going to be Gozer Atu Mezid. If we let him go unintentionally, he's going to start doing it intentionally. So we're going to penalize him there also and say, you have to pay again. So that'll be the difference in their opinions. But at this point, you don't have any Oker Min HaTorah, because now the Chachamim didn't stop anything. They just added on and forced you to pay again. They're not causing you to take back the original payment, and therefore there's no proof from this Mishnah. So now next, Tashma. Dam shnitma, v'zorko b'shogeg. So the dam that became Tamei, And then he sprinkled it on the Mizbeach b'shogeg hurtza. Then it works. B'mezid, if he does it intentionally, lo hurtza. It does not work. So now, ha-hocha midoraita tzurei miratze. Here, mina Torah, it does work. And nevertheless, we're telling you that it doesn't work. Dam shetamei, dam tamei, a korban that has dam that became tamei, does not go into the Mizbeach. It gets spilled out. It is no good to go on the Mizbeach. Yet here, he went ahead, and despite the fact that it was no good, he went ahead and sprinkled it on the Mizbeach. So the question is, how did he sprinkle on the Mizbeach? Did he do it intentionally or unintentionally? If he did it unintentionally, hurtza, the Chachamim say it works, and the Korban counts. And it's his Yotze, the Balim who brought this Korban are Yotze with that Korban. On the other hand, if he does it intentionally, he puts it on Dam Tamei onto the Mizbeach, then lower hurtza, it doesn't work. Gemara is now going to challenge this and say, wait a minute, we have a Braita that tells us that it works no matter what. Titania. Alma tzitz miratzeh. The tzitz is miratzeh because it says by the tzitz that it's mechapra lavona kodoshim. What is the avona kodoshim that the tzitz is miratzeh? The Gemara goes through all different choices. And in the end, the Gemara comes out that it comes to be miratzeh on tumot in the korban, which is al adam vala basar vala chelev shinitma. It takes care of dam, basar, or chelev that became tamei. Ben b'shogeg, ben b'mezid, ben b'ones, ben b'ratzon, ben b'yachid, ben b'tzibor. It matters not what this korban is. Doesn't matter if he does it intentionally, if he does it unintentionally. Doesn't matter if he did it under duress or he did it willingly. Doesn't matter if it's a korban yachid or a korban tzibor. In all these cases, that sits in his ratza. Now, obviously, this is according to one who says tumah is dechuya b'tzibor, because if you believe tumah hutra b'tzibor, you don't need the tzitz. But if you have tumah dechuya b'tzibor, you need the tzitz to be miratza in this case. So here, the tzitz overcomes all these problems. Mezid, shogeg, all of these things, it overcomes everything. And yet you're telling me, the din is, if he did it b'mezid, no good. B'shogeg, good. All right, so the shogeg is like the din of Torah. But b'mezid, now you're doing something that's against the Torah. The Torah said, it's fine. And you're coming along, coming and saying, it's not fine. What's going to happen now? These balim are going to have to come around and bring another korban. And then, v'amrei rabbanon lo hurtza, b'mezid, it's not hurtza. The kahadr ma'al chulin azara. Now you're going to force this guy to bring another korban when he didn't have to. And now you're bringing chulin into the azara because he's bringing a korban that he didn't need to bring. He brought a chatat originally. It was chayav a chatat. Or yoledet. She was chayavet to bring her korbanot. All of a sudden the dam came to me and the kohen intentionally puts it on mizbech. As far as the Torah is concerned, this person has discharged their obligation to bring a chatat or the yoledet to discharge their obligation. But we're going to say, chamin say it didn't work. So now this person's got to bring another chatat, or this yoled is going to bring korbanot again. Meantime, they're not necessary korbanot. So you're going to bring chulin into the azara when you didn't need to bring korbanot. So the kohanim are going to eat from it. You're going to have all sorts of problems. It could be even done malika, done on this bird, which is a nevela in chulin, only works in kodashim. You have all sorts of problems that are going to arise from this. How could the chachamim come and be oker devar min haTorah? Just as an aside, when we learned this gemara in other places, in Yoma, and in Zvachim, the Gemara gives a different answer. Because there's a stira between the two sources. One source says, shogeg good, mezid bad. And the other source says, shogeg mezid, everything's fine. So there's a machloket amuraim over there about what we're where the mezid and shogeg came up. Was the mezid and shogeg when he did the zrikat adam? Did the Kohen do it intentionally or unintentionally? Or was the tumah that came on the dam intentional or unintentional? And they have a machloket which way it is. Meaning that each one of them says one of these two is addressing one of those issues. So in one case, we're talking about the dam. Did he intentionally make the dam tamei or unintentionally? And maybe there, that's where it's shogeg, yes, mezid, no. And then the case by the, once he's done it, he went and sprinkled it. Whether it's shogeg or mezid, everything's fine. And the other day, I says the opposite way around. So the Gemara over there answers the stira between these differently by saying that they're talking about different aspects of the process. How he became tamei, or whether he did the zrikat adam. And each one of these brightos is they're addressing one of them, and therefore there's no stira between them. Over here, the Gemara does not do that and assumes that they're talking about the same issue, which seems to be Zrikat Adam. And because of that, the Gemara says here, there's a stira between them. So now, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Ma'elo Hurtza. What does it mean that it doesn't work? The Kamar Latir Basar Ba'Achila. To make the Basar Mutar to eat. Now, this is also very difficult because the Basar is never Mutar Ba'Achila. The Tzitz is Meratze and Tumah, but it's never Meratze and Tumat Basar. It never allows the basar to be eaten because the basar tamei, even if the tzitz is meratzeh and basar tamei, that only helps in terms of your ability if you need basar. For instance, some day you'll believe you're going to do zrikat adam, but the basar is still there. So the tzitz will be meratzeh, the basar is considered to be extant. But it doesn't help you to eat the basar. If the basar was tamei and the tzitz is meratzeh, it does not help you. You're not allowed to eat the basar. The bright over there talked about basar, chelev, and dam that became tameh. As Tosafot points out over here, ala basar, valetir basar bachila lo mahani ritzui tzitz. The tzitz doesn't help with that. Helps to the one who says that yish dam afopishein basar. You can sprinkle the dam even without the basar, and therefore, what is the benefit of the basar being there? So Tosafot talks about issues of pigol and other things that it helps to have the basar around. And obviously, according to the mandamar, that you can only sprinkle the dam when the basar is around. Then the tzitz being meratzeh, even though you can't eat the basar, the fact that the basar is still intact makes it that you can do the zrikat adam, even though the basar is tameh. Oh, so what it says here is that if he does it intentionally, then the kohanim cannot eat the basar. On the other hand, if he does it unintentionally, the kohanim can eat the basar. But ben kach, aval balim nitzkaprubo. Either way, the balim attain kapara. So in terms of bringing a new korban, there's no problem, because we're not going to force him to bring a new korban anymore. So that's fine. You clear that problem up, and they're not okir davar min haTorah. The only question the Chachamim entered into is whether the Kohanim eat the basar or they don't eat the basar. On that, the Gemara says, sof, ki amit akra achilat basar. And then you're still causing a problem in terms of eating basar. Because, biktiv, vachlu otam asher kupar bahem, v'lameit shokohanim ochlim abalim mitkaprim. From there you learn that the Kohanim eat, and the balim attain kapara. Now, some explain this, or the gears that they have here implies that the problem is that the balim will not attain kapara over here, because if the kohanim don't eat the basar, then there's no kapara, they get to bring another korban. That is clearly incorrect, because that's not the case. The eating of the basar is a shayere mitzvah. It's a leftover of the mitzvah. They're supposed to eat it, and that'll bring kapara to balim, but if they don't eat it, it's not ma'akev the kapara. Therefore, the girsa that we have in front of us is the girsa of Rashi, that does not tie it to kapara, but rather says, there's a mitzvah incumbent upon the Kohanim to eat the basar. Because v'achlu otam asher kupar bahem, that the Kohanim eat and they bring kaparat to the balim, and therefore there is a certain amount of incumbency on the Kohanim to eat the basar. And you're forfeiting that mitzvah by the Chachamim here in entering and saying that when you do it b'mezid, you do the zrikat adam b'mezid, when it's tameh, then lo hurtza. So the balim are off the hook because their korban counts, they don't have to make another korban. But now you're telling the Kohanim not to eat basar, which is a mitzvah for them to do, and you're telling them, don't do that mitzvah midoraita. How can you do that? How can you suspend the mitzvah doraita for them? So Amarlei, this is the answer that you're all familiar with, because we're going to see now it's the answer for most of these issues where we are okir davar min haTorah, sheif v'al tasish ani. When you're passive, it's much different. The Chachamim have the right or empowered in a situation in which you are passive to go ahead and oker davar min haTorah. And as Rashi says it over here, la vakirahi. That's not called being oker davar min haTorah. Kagon achilat basar asehi. Here it's a mitzvah to say. It really will only apply when you have a mitzvah to say. Mitzvah to say tells you to do something. Instead of doing that, you just sit back and desist from doing it. So you're not oker davar min haTorah because you're not actively doing something against the Torah. Memela. It's something that happens by itself. You're being passive. It causes you to violate the Torah's requirement passively. So that's okay. That's not called Oker Devar Min haTorah. Where are we worried about Oker Devar Min haTorah is be a dying. When you physically do it, when you actively do it, so that comes up with a lota, say. Torah says you don't subta something and then the Chamim come along and tell you to do it, then you would be actively abrogating that which the Torah says. So over there, we're not going to allow you because there, we won't allow Akira Devar Min haTorah. So that's what's going on over here. What the Chamim said is Lohur Tzah, and then the Kohanim sit back. And even though they're supposed to eat the basar, they're just sitting back, and the basar will become notar. So yeah, they let a mitzvah go, but it's a shave, v'al taseh. It's passive, and because it's passive, that's why we allow this akira min haTorah. So you should be familiar, and this is going to come up now, right away. There are a million more questions about akira davar min haTorah, and this is the answer in all these cases. Amarlei. Rav Chista says back to Rabba, by lo tvach, I wanted to ask you all these questions. What are those questions? Arel, Haza'a, Ismail, Sadin b'tzitzit, kivsei atzeret, shofar, lulav. I had all these questions that I wanted to ask you, but now I can't. Hashta deshanita la and shevi al taseh, lo ma'akkerhu. Now that you already told me that being passive is not called an akira min haTorah, kulunami, the answer to all of those cases where the Chachamim interceded and changed the din min haTorah, shevi al taseh ninhu, they're all passive actions, and therefore it's not considered to be akira. So you'll be familiar with two of them, which is shofar and lulav. When Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbat, we don't blow the shofar. How could the Chachamim suspend the mitzvah midoraita to blow shofar and say don't blow shofar on Shabbat? Lulav, when the first day of Sukkot falls out on Shabbat, where midoraita, there's a requirement to take lulav, the Chachamim came along and suspended that and said don't take the lulav on the first day of Sukkot. How could they do that? In both cases, the answer is she'vel taseh. You're passive. There, it's a mitzvah taseh, and they're telling you to basically sit back and let the mitzvah taseh pass. So that she'vel taseh is not called akira davar min haTorah because you're doing it in a passive manner. So that's the answer by shofar v'lulav. The question is by the other cases. What are the other cases here? We'll go through them one by one. Arel. Arel is a case where a ger converts. Where a ger converts, the Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai argue about the status of a ger when he converts. Here, Beit Hillel is the chumrah. Beit Shammai says the Arel converts. He goes to the mikveh and he's fine. He can go on and bring korbanot. He's totally fine. Beit Hillel says when a ger converts and he gets a milah, that he says, kol poresh min ha-relut, keporesh min ha-kever. Anybody who gets a brit milah when they're converting, it's as if they touch tumat amet, and they have to wait a 7-day waiting period and become tahor from the tumat amet. Why did they do that? Because they were afraid. What happens in this year? The convert came into Klal Yisrael 3 days before Pesach. 3 days before Pesach, he gets his brit milah, so it'd be totally fine. Now he has a brit, he can bring the korban at Pesach. But he touched tumat amet before he converted. He touched tumat amet, or he came into contact with the mate. So now he converts, and he's totally tahor. Mina Torah, this ger is totally fine. So the ger goes ahead and he brings a korban at Pesach. That's what Beit Shammai says he does. Beit Hillel says, don't let him bring a korban at Pesach. Why? Because what happens next year? Next year, 3 days before Pesach, he's going to touch a mate. And he said, last year I touched a mate 3 days before Pesach, and I was able to bring the korban Pesach. So this year too, I'll touch a mate, and I'll be able to bring the korban Pesach 3 days later. What he didn't realize is last year he was a goy, and that's why the tumat mate didn't affect him. This year he's a Jew, and the tumat mate affects him. So how do I prevent that problem? I say that when the ger converts, when he again gets his milah, he's automatically tamei tumat meit, and he's got to wait 7 days. Now, 3 days before Pesach, he does this, and now he's going to be tamei tumat meit through Erev Pesach. That's only midrabanan. And yet, what's going to happen? He's not going to bring the korban at Pesach. The Chamim suspended his right to bring the korban at Pesach because of this gzeirah, or this takana, to protect him in future years. So their din d'oraita is an assay to bring Pesach. The Chamim said, no, he's like tumat amet, don't do it. So again, what's the answer? Shevi al taseh. Over there, you just tell him to be passive. You tell him not to bring the korban at Pesach. Sit it out. So that's what it's doing over there. Haza'ah. That's questionable. Because the problem is that midoraita, he is tahor legamre. Since he's tahor legamre and he forfeited the right to bring it during Pesach Rishon, he may not be able to bring Pesach Sheni. Because mina Torah, he was okay. It's only Chamim suspended his right. So the fact is that Mina Torah, he just gave up his right to bring Pesach. He may not be entitled to a Pesach Sheni, because then he'll be bringing Chun Lazara, because he was entitled. Now, Haza'ah is the same case here. Turns out that he needs to get sprinkled by Haza'ah. Sprinkling is a Shvut, which is a Isur de Rabbanan. Chamim said you're not allowed to do sprinkling on Shabbat. It is a Din de Rabbanan that says that, or Gzeir de Rabbanan, that on Shabbat you're not allowed to do Haza'ah. What happens if this individual is Tamei, and he needs his Haza'ah, his last Haza'ah is on Shabbat? Erev Pesach at Shabbat, he needs his Haza'ah in order to bring the Korban at Pesach. So you would think that the Chamim would waive their Isur of Haza'ah, let him get the Haza'ah so he can bring the Korban at Pesach, which is a Din d'oraita, it's an Asay of Karet. So the Chamim said, no, Heimidu divrehem b'makom Karet. Chamim say, no Haza'ah on Shabbat, and too bad, you're going to lose out on the Korban at Pesach. Once again, here, midoraita, this guy could get a Haza'ah, and he should be fine to bring the Korban at Pesach. Yet the Chamim are suspending his right to do this. Tell him, don't do Haza'ah, don't bring the Korban at Pesach. So what's the answer again? Shevel taseh, shiny. Ismail is a case by Brit Milah on Shabbat. The eighth day of the child fell out on Shabbat. Milah is dochet a Shabbat. But they didn't have the knife. The Milah knife wasn't there. So now if you have to bring it from Rishut HaRabim into Rishut HaYachid, that's a violation d'oraita. Doesn't work, except for Rabbi Eliezer, who says that Makshirei Milah work. You're allowed to even violate the Makshirei Milah. But according to Rabbi Kiva and all the other Chachamim, that's it. You're out of luck because you don't have the knife here. It's an Isur d'oraita to bring the knife. Can't do the Brit on Shabbat. What happens if the knife is found somewhere that's a Carmelite? Somewhere it's only an Isur d'Rabbanan to carry on Shabbat. Can you bring the knife in order to do the Brit Milah? The answer is no. The Chachamim said no. Don't bring the knife. And now you're going to give up the chance to do Milah Bizman on the eighth day because of an Isur d'Rabbanan that doesn't let you carry from Karpi Field to Gagol to Chatzerot. You could have done it in a way that would only been an Isur d'Rabbanan. Chamim said, no, Isur d'Rabbanan, you can't do the Brit Milah. Again, giving up a din d'oraita to do Milah Bizmano in order to uphold the din of Chachamim of an Isur of carrying on Shabbat. Answer again is, Shevel Taseh. Just don't do. Don't actively do anything and you're fine. Next case is Sadin B'Tzitzit. Kilayim in Tzitzit. If you wear a linen beged, Minat Torah, you're allowed to put woolen tzitzit in the beged, which is kilayim. You have to. That's the juxtaposition in the pasuk between lo tilbash kilayim and gedilim tasedacha. Tzitzit and kilayim are found in the same pasuk to teach you that tzitzit can be kilayim. So if you wear a linen baget, mina Torah, you're chayav in tzitzit. Mul in tzitzit, you have to put them on and you're chayav. What do the chachamim say? The chachamim say that we don't put tzitzit in kilayim. Why? Because we saw this together in numerous places, Gemara Menachot, also in Gemara and Shabbat, which is that we're worried about the problem of ksut lailo. We're worried about nighttime, where he's patur mina tzitzit. As long as he's chayav in tzitzit, then he overcomes the problem of kilayim. But if he's not chayav in tzitzit, and he continues to wear the kilayim, he's wearing the kilayim shelo b'makom mitzvah. If he wears the kilayim shelo b'makom mitzvah, then he's violating kilayim without accomplishing any mitzvah. Again, there it's a machloket rishonim, we've seen this in the past, about the tour is uritemul tov, which says that you can only, when you see the tzitzit, are you chayav. It's machloket rishonim, whether that means day and night, that you only chayav in tzitzit during the day, you're patur at night, or does it mean day begadim are chayav in tzitzit, and night begadim are patur min tzitzit. Machloket rishonim, we're machmir like both shitot. So that means if you wear your pajamas during the day, you need tzitzit, and if you wear your clothes at night, you wear tzitzit. Obviously, if it's your day clothes during the day, you're chayav for sure in tzitzit. We're choshish for both shitot. So it's only if you're wearing your pajamas at night that you would technically be patur min tzitzit, because they're both, they all agree that you're patur. But our fear is that if we allow you to put in kilayim, then what's going to happen? You're going to have kilayim in tzitzit by the time that it's patur. So now we suspend tzitzit. So this guy is going to go put on a four-cornered beged and made out of pishtan that is chayav in tzitzit min haTorah, and then he's not going to put tzitzit in there. So he's supposed to be putting in tzitzit, and yet he's not putting in tzitzit. Why is that allowed? Again, shevi al tasa shiny. He's just going to sit back, not put in tzitzit. Ah, Tosfot says, that's not so simple over here. It's not really a shevi al tasa, because here you put on the four-cornered beged. And when you put on the four-cornered beged, you're going to violate putting on a four-cornered beged. Okay, what do you say? No. Putting it on is not the violation. It's wearing it that's the violation. And when he wears it, that's not a problem. He says, how is this a shevi al tasa? At the time that he puts on the talit, he's a bat chiyuva. At that time, he's obligated to have tzitzit on the beged. And he's putting on the beged. And he doesn't have tzitzit. He's b'yadayim, violating the mitzvah to have tzitzit on your beged. So what is v'yesh lomar? He says, b'shat ituf akati lo mechayev. You're not chayev in tzitzit when you wrap yourself. You're only chayev in tzitzit from that point forward, ad achar shnitatev. After you put it on, then you become chayev in tzitzit. The putting on the beged is not a chiyuv in tzitzit. So then, the achar shnitatev, and once you're ready wrapped in the beged, then it's a shev al tasehu, because you already put the beged on. See, we don't make you remove it. Now that's also not so simple, because by kilayim, the Gemara determines that when you put on kilayim, the levisha of kilayim is problematic. So if you put on a beged with kilayim, you're in violation, and if you continue to wear a beged with kilayim, you're still in violation all the time that you wear it. And the same should be true with tzitzit. So again, you're actively violating the mitzvah. So now Tosva differentiates and says, no, by kilayim, it's true. And the problem continues even when you're doing it passively. The problem, kilayim, also happens when you put the beged on, and also continues when you keep the beged on. By tzitzit, it's different. By tzitzit, when you put on the tzitzit, you're doing something active, but at that point, you're not chayav in tzitzit. You only become chayav in tzitzit once the beged is on. Once the beged is on, okay, then you're passive, and they don't have to worry about it. Even though by kilayim, the din is, if you have kilayim on, after you've already put the beged on, we don't call that a shev al tasa. We said that's actively violating kilayim, and you got to take the beged off. Just wearing something passively is not called being passive. That's called being active. And we make you take it off. So how come over here, by tzitzit, we don't say the same thing? So the Reis says, shiny kilayim, dikar yisur b'shat levishah, shalavash b'yisur. That by kilayim, the major thing is that you're covered in something that is kilayim. Avakam lo mitchayev ad achar shnitatev. Over here, the chiyuv comes from the moment that after you put it on. After you put it on, that's when the mitzvah starts. By kilayim, the mitzvah starts when you're putting on. You're not allowed to put on a beged that has kilayim in it. But then in the end, Tosafot asks on himself and said, presents a very difficult problem here, and he says, the bracha that we make on tzitzit. The bracha that we make on tzitzit is, lihitateif bat tzitzit. The Bahag brings that as a proof that we paskin, that tzitzit are chovet agavra, not chovet amana. Whether tzitzit is a chiyuv of the beged, or it's a chiyuv on the person who's wearing the beged. And the Bahag proves it from the fact that we say, lihitateif tzitzit as a chovet agavra. But that's also a problem. The bracha that we're making is lihitateif tzitzit, which makes it sound like the atifa itself is the mitzvah. The atifa itself is a mitzvah, you're active at that point in time. So why, when you're active over there, is that not considered to be a violation of a din Torah actively and not just passively? And so Tosfot leaves that as a little bit of a tzarchiyun over here, because if you explain it the way he does to get out of the problem, you still run into a problem of the fact of the brachas, litatef and tzitzit, which indicates that the mitzvah is litatef. Now, truth is, we don't pass on like either of these ideas by tzitzit. But in this case, the way that we view tzitzit is, number one, litatef is the main mitzvah. And when you're doing atifayt, it is a mitzvah. And beyond that, when you continue to wear the talit afterwards, every time that you're wearing it afterwards, that is a mitzvah. For instance, in a case where you put your talit on before the zman of talit, in that case, you can't make a bracha. But if you continue to wear it into the zman, you can stop and make a bracha on the tzitzit. Because you're continuing to do the mitzvah. Every moment that you have the talit on, you're doing a mitzvah of tzitzit. And therefore, you can make a bracha. And that's against what Tosafot says over here, that mitzvah tzitzit is not lehitatef. And is also, once you're wearing it, it's only passive. We say no. We say, number one, that when you put the tzitzit on, it's an active mitzvah, and that's the mitzvah. And number two is, after you have the tzitzit on, every moment you have it on, it's a kumvaseh. You're doing something actively, and therefore you can make a bracha on it. If it was just passive, then you couldn't make a bracha on it. The fact that you're still wearing tzitzit after the zman of tzitzit comes in, means you can make a bracha on the tzitzit, because you're actively wearing tzitzit. So, again, aloha, both of these assumptions of Tosfot are wrong. The hitatef is a mitzvah. And number two is, when you're wearing it, you're not passive, you are active. But Tosfot's trying to deal with the Gemara over here, calling it a shein v'al taseh with regards to sedin bit tzitzit. So in the end, you have a difficulty here, because the brocha is lehitatef bit tzitzit, which indicates that there's an obligation on the gavra, on the individual himself, to put tzitzit on. And it's not chuvat amana, it's not an obligation on the beged. And therefore, when he's wearing it, he has an obligation to put on tzitzit. And he's actually wearing this beged without tzitzit on it. So some suggest that even though it's chuvat gavra, there's still an aspect of the beged in here. And so therefore, even though the gavra is supposed to put in the tzitzit, nevertheless, the violation here is wearing the beged without tzitzit, and wearing the beged without tzitzit is passive instead of being an active violation. And then there's still others that suggest that the mitzvah min haTorah is not to not wear a four-cornered beged without tzitzit, but it is to put tzitzit in a four-cornered beged. And once the Chachamim said don't do that, then it's a shei v'al taseh, because the mitzvah is to put tzitzit in a beged that has arba kanfot. The mitzvah is not to not wear a beged with four corners that doesn't have tzitzit. So if you formulate it that way, then it becomes a shei v'al taseh instead of a kum v'aseh. Next one is kivsei atzeret. This is the hardest one. These are the kivsei shlamim that are brought on Shavuot. They're only shlamim shel tzibur that are brought. Now, what's the problem there? What's the gzeira? And what is the shei v'al taseh? Rashi says, lo kibalti mi rabutai. My rebbeim never taught me something. I have no mesora for my rebbeim about this. But I'll tell you what I think it is, and I think I'm right. He says it has to do with the fact that on Shabbat, when you have korbanot tzibur for the moadim and for anything to do with the regular avodah in the mikdash, they suspend Shabbos. So on Shabbat, you bring the korban tamid, you bring the korbanei musaf. If Yom Tov falls out on Shabbat, you bring the korbanei musaf of the Yom Tov, you bring the korbanot associated with the Yom Tov on Shabbat. So here, kivsei atzeret, if it falls out on Shabbat in a regular circumstance, the kivsei atzeret would be done on Shabbat. You would shech them, and then you would bring the korban on Shabbat. Now, what happens in a case where they were done shelo lishma? Now, in a korban that is done shelo lishma, we learned this in the beginning of the Masechet Zvachim. In the beginning of Masechet Zvachim, it says that kol korbanot that you bring shelo lishma are good korbanot, ela shelo alu l'shem balim. They just don't help out the owners. So, in this case, say for instance, a case where an owner brought an olah, and the Kohen brought it as a shlamim instead. So as far as the Korban is concerned, it's a kosher shlamim. Just the person who brought it didn't bring an olah that he was supposed to bring. So now this same thing happened by the shlamim of the kivsei atzeret. The Kohen went and brought them, and instead of bringing them as shlamim, he put them on as olot. So he did them shelo lishma. He did them improperly. Now, in a normal situation where he didn't do them properly, he puts them on the mizbeach, and they continue to do the Korban, because it's a fine Korban olah. Just continue doing it. But here, the Chachamim said that the only time that we allow you to violate Shabbat and continue with the process of doing the Korban is if you're doing it lishma and the Korban's accomplishing what it's supposed to accomplish. Over here, since the Korban will not accomplish what it's accomplishing, because in the end, it lo alu l'balim, and they'll have to bring another set of shlamim in order to do the kivsei atzeret, therefore the Chachamim said, don't bring this Korban. If you don't bring the Korban over here, because zrika dam on Shabbat is a shvut, and we're not going to let you do Zrikat Adam on Shabbat, and therefore you're not going to bring this Korban at all, you're actually going to lose out on three mitzvot d'oraita. Number one is Zrikat Adam, which is a mitzvah deraita to do the Zrikat Adam. Number two is the Akhtarat Emurim, putting the fats on the Mizbeach. That's also a mitzvah deraita. And the last one is the Achilat Basar, the eating whatever is left over from the Korban. It's a Shlamim. It's an Olah, I made it a Shlamim. You're not going to eat the Basar. So over here, where he did it Shalom Lishma, the Chachamim put up their word and said, don't bring the Korban anymore. Don't bring it. You don't bring it, you're waiving three mitzvot doraita by not bringing the Korban. How could the Chachamim do that? Again, what's the answer? Sheva al tase. You're just sitting back and letting the dam not go on the mizbeach. You're just sitting back. And in the end, that's what happens, right? You miss out on these mitzvot, but it's all passive. So that's the way Rashi explains that case. Now, with regards to this sheva al tase, there are many questions you can ask about why or how it works. Something that's taken up by Rav Elchanan Wasserman in the Kobet Se'arot. And over there, he discusses all the different issues, some of which include that when the Chachamim said sheva al tase, did they forfeit your right to do the mitzvah anymore? So for instance, in a case where a person blows shofar when the first day of Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbat, did the Chachamim say sheva al tase, and they forfeit your right to do the mitzvah, and now you blow the shofar on Shabbat as if you did nothing, or maybe that you're in violation of Shabbat? Or the Chachamim said, do a sheva al tase, but if you go ahead and violate it, you are accomplishing the mitzvah, you still do the mitzvah. So that would be enough. Kamina Rishonim argue about the fact as to whether if you blow shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbat, as to whether you're Yotzei the mitzvah of shofar, you're not Yotzei the mitzvah of shofar, that relates to that question. You can also ask why Sheva al Tase works. Does Sheva al Tase work because you are passive instead of active? Or does it have to do with the nature of an Aseh versus a Lotase? A Lotase is a much more chamur din min haTorah, and therefore we're not going to let you violate it. An Aseh, which is a lower form or din min haTorah, there we're going to allow you to violate it. So what's allowing this to happen? Is it the passive versus the active? Or is it the fact that it's an Aseh versus a Lotase? Or maybe it's the combination of both? So all of these questions, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, the Kobet Zarot, lays out these questions, and in laying out those questions, tries to show that it helps you to understand the positions of the Rishonim with regards to this issue of Shevi al Tase. All right, so we got out of all those cases. Next, Tashma, Elav Tishmeun. It says there by a Navi Emet that you have to listen to a Navi Emet no matter what. What does it mean, no matter what? Afilu omer lecha avur al achat mikol mitzvot shebetorah. Even if he tells you to violate one of the mitzvot of Torah, kigon Eliyahu Bahar HaKamel. Eliyahu Bahar HaKamel is bringing Bamot, Bizman Yisrael Bamot. The Mikdash is extant. You're not allowed to bring Korbanot on another hire somewhere there. And he's telling the people, build a Mizbeach, bring Korbanot here on a Mizbeach that's outside the Mikdash. How can you listen to Eliyahu HaNavi? The answer is, because the Torah says, Elav Tishmon. You have to listen to him no matter what. Hakol Lefi Sha'a Shmalo. Whatever the time requires, you have to listen to him. If the Navi feels this is the appropriate thing to do, you have to listen to him. Shani Hotam Dichtiv Elav Tishmon. Over there, it says, Elav Tishmon, that you have to listen to him. Then there's a specific directive, Min HaTorah, to listen to him, even though he's going to violate an Easter in the Torah. So you can't prove anything from there that the Chamim are empowered to be Oker Davar Min HaTorah, because the Torah says, Elav Tishmon, you have to listen to him no matter what. So what it says, V'ligvar Mine, let's learn from the Navi that that will become a paradigm and set a precedent. That since the Navi is granted the right Min HaTorah to override Mitzvot HaTorah, so too we'll extrapolate that to the Chachamim. It says, Migdar Milto Shiny. That case is different because over there, we would say it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's a unique circumstance, which is there, Eliyahu HaNavi is trying to stop the people from worshipping Avodah Zarah. So he's doing something extreme in order to stop them from doing Avodah Zarah. So it's what we call a one-time situation. It's a moment, one-time thing that's going to happen. We're not going to repeat it again. It's not going to happen again. When the Chachamim come in to Oker something, they're doing that on a permanent basis. They're telling you, don't do this mitzvah anytime this circumstance comes up. That's not something doing something to stop people from acting improperly in a certain circumstance. The Elav Tishmon by the Navi is granted to him as a special powers for special situations. And that's exactly what Eliyahu Navi does. He invokes it in a time where it was needed because the people are worshiping Avodah Zarah and he wants to prove to them that Hashem's the real God. So over there, we grant the power to the Navi. But to give blanket powers where you can just undermine a din d'oraita on a permanent basis, that we don't come. You can't learn that from here. It's not the same type of circumstance. Now, Tosafot here asks a lot of good questions. He says, first of all, how could you ever think to extrapolate the din from the Navi to regular life? Because the Navi gets a word from Hashem. The Navi gets nivuah. And then based on that nivuah, he goes out and tells you what to do. So how could you suggest here that'll be the paradigm? The paradigm is that Hashem speaks to Navi, tells him to do it. And then you're going to say from that, even when Hashem doesn't tell you, go ahead and miokar davar min haTorah. How could you compare them? So he says, v'nira, dekeven da'alpi dibur shari, mishum tzorach sha'a, since based on Hashem it's mutar, hadinu shalo apil yidibur, shareina navi rashay l'chadesh davar me'ata. The fact that Hashem instructed him is not anything of a chiddush, because the navi is not allowed to do anything new. He's not allowed to create any new halachot. He's not allowed to change the Torah. So the fact that Hashem granted in his power must be that it's something that's embedded in the Torah. That there is a power to override the Torah by leaders. If that's the case, then the Chachamim should be granted that same power. That's the question. Even though Hashem's speaking to him, Hashem's not speaking to the Chachamim. Number two is, how do you listen to a Navi? How do you know when a Navi is a Navi Sheker and a Navi Emet? How do you know to listen to Eliyahu Bar HaKamel? So there, the Chachamim say, Heichid Muchzok Shaini. It has to be a case where he established his credentials. So, if once you've established credentials, then the people can limit you. Eliyahu HaNavi already proved that he was a Navi. So they knew he was a Navi Emet. Then you can listen to him to violate the Torah. But some guy shows up, he says, I'm a Navi, violate the Torah. You don't have to listen to him because he hasn't proven any credentials. He hasn't shown you any credentials. And Tosfa brings cases like that. How could Yitzchak go to Akedat Yitzchak when Avram is telling him to go? Yitzchak didn't speak to God, Avram spoke to God. So how can Yitzchak listen to Avram? Well, Ella, that Avram already had credentials that he had spoken to God, and therefore Yitzchak listens to him in that case. And also Eliyahu HaKarmel. How could the people listen to Eliyahu HaKarmel? They're bringing shchutei chutz, halat chutz. They're in violation of all these different things, mi doraita. So that the answer is because he is itchazik. He's now been established that he's a Navi, and he's established that he is trustworthy and that Hashem speaks to him. In those cases, we allow him to act. Now, we only allow him to act when it's Migdar Milta, which is something that is Tzorach Sha'ah, that is for the Rabbim, in order to prove something. But you can't just do it willy-nilly. You can't just say, oh, the Navi now, since he's a real Navi, he can tell you to do anything. No, it has to be for a specific purpose. But that's the only power that's imbued in the Navi, which is his ability, when he's established credentials, to do a one-time thing in order to straighten the people out. Right now, we have a next type of proof, which is, the Gemara in Kiddushin is very famous, Teshma. Bitlo mitbutal. If he nullifies it, it is nullified. Divrei Rabbi. He can't nullify it, and he can't change the conditions. Because otherwise, what's the purpose of having Beit Din? Beit Din's powers have been ruined in that case. So let's go back. The Din Doraita is that if an individual sends a get to his wife, and he sends it by a proxy, he sends it through a shliach. So what he can do is he can suspend the proxy. He's able to remove the proxy's rights. So he sent the shliach off on his way, and he's running over to the woman to give her a get. This guy goes into Beit Din and says, listen, I want to take away this guy's right to be my shliach, to be my proxy. It works. He's able to do that. Problem is, the shliach keeps going on his mission. He has no idea that his rights were suspended, and therefore now he goes and gives the get to the woman. The woman thinks she got a regular get. She goes off and gets married. Meantime, she is still Eshet Ish because the get was ruined or suspended. So what the Chachamim said is, we're not going to allow you to do this. We're going to suspend your right to go ahead and nullify the proxy, to take away the proxy's rights. Same thing with the get itself. The get has to be given lishma, has to be given willingly by the husband. If he gives the get and then he puts in a condition in it, and then he changes the conditions in front of Beit Din, or he nullifies and says the get's not a real get, in all those cases, he has the ability to ruin the get. But the whole problem is the woman is never going to know about it. And it's going to cause problems. So the Chachamim suspended his right to do this in any of these cases. Now the question is, after the Chachamim suspended his right and he did it anyway, what happens? So that's what the answer is. Butlo mitvital, divrei Rabbi. Rabbi says that if he does it anyway, it still works. Because midoraita, it works. The Chachamim said, don't do it. But if he goes ahead and does it, it works. Because that's what works to a raita. Shimon Gamaliel comes back to him and says, first of all, you can't be mivatal it. And he can't be most even a snai, because if you don't say that, then what's the whole purpose of Takana Chachamim, that you can't do this? If the Chachamim say you can't do this, and then you go ahead and do it and it works, then what was the point of the Takana Chachamim? The whole point of the Takana Chachamim is that they take away your right to do this. So over here, that's exactly what they're saying. They're taking away your right to do this. Oh, okir davar min haTorah. Min haTorah, this woman is an Eshet Ish. Meantime, the Chachamim suspended your right to stop the get, and this woman now is going to be free to go married, even though technically min haTorah she's married. Okir davar min haTorah. V'hochad midoraita batel haget. Midoraita the get is no good. Mishum got koach Beit Din? Because we're worried about ensuring that the power of Beit Din is well established and people can't violate it. Now you're going to let a woman get married, assuming that she has a get, when it's not a real get midoraita. So Gemara says, no problem. Manda mikadesh, adaita derabonon mikadesh. Whoever has kiddushin, whoever marries a woman, does it, embedded in his kiddushin, is the power of the chachamim. Why? Because you say, harei at mikudeshet li, betabat zu, kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. That, what's kedat Moshe v'Yisrael? That I am now saying that I want this kiddushin to work the way that the chachamim, kedat Moshe v'Yisrael, the way that the chachamim want it to work. And therefore the chachamim were given a power to unwind your kiddushin. And that's what they do here. Bavkinu rabban and the kiddushin. The chachamim suspend your kiddushin. They basically say that you were never married. Not that the get is effective over here. You were never married, so you don't need a get. They basically took away your marriage. How do they do that? Because they said instead of the money that you give being money of kiddushin, the money is now a gift to the woman. You gave her a gift. How can they do that? How can they change? It's your money. You said that you did kiddushin. Hefker, Beit Din Hefker. Beit Din has the right in monetary matters to take away or to disown you from your property. And over here, they changed that. They basically say that the money that you gave was not kesef kiddushin, it was a kesef matana, and retroactively, you were never married. So the way they work over here is not by saying the get is effective, even though we don't write that the get is ineffective. They basically went back and oker the kiddushin. They say you were never married, so you don't need a get. So they're oker kiddushin mi'ikaru. So that's how we're functioning over here, and that's why it's not an akira dvar min haTorah, because they were never married min haTorah now, because the chamim have the power to take away your right to give the money as money of kiddushin, because that's what you said when you did that. You said, "Ariad mekdesh libitvadzu kedat Moshe v'Yisrael." You empower the chachamim to unwind your kiddushin. So that comes from what we saw yesterday's daf, that hefker baked in hefker. So we already saw that that's a plausible solution to these problems. In monetary matters, you have hefker baked in hefker. We had two opinions there where we learned it out from. One of them taught us that, the first one from Ezra taught us that you can take away or disown someone from their property. And the second pasuk from Yeshua taught us not only can you disown them from the property, you can give it to someone else. That you have the ability to take away the property and give it to someone else. So the Pachamim are doing that here. They're taking away your money as kiss of Kiddushim and giving it to the woman as a gift. And therefore the Kiddushim is suspended. So therefore the Gemara says, okay, that's easy with regards to Kesef. Hatin after Kaddish Bekaspa. That works out well if you did Kiddushim through money. Kaddish Bebiah, Maika the Maimar. If you do Kiddushim with Biah, then what are you going to say? First Mishnah in Kiddushin says, Aisha mikadeshet, the woman can be nitkadeshet bekesef ubishtar ubebiyah. The woman can be married through money, shtar, and biyah. So okay, it's kesef you can take care of here. Kesef is monetary matters, hefker baked in hefker. What happens if you mikadesh the isha through biyah? So midoraita, this is a good Kiddushin. And how can the chachamim suspend it? There's no monetary matter here for them to say hefker baked in hefker. Where it says, shav yuah rabbanan bilato bilat znot. They changed his biyah into a biyah of znut. They're able to now say that the biyah that he did then wasn't a biyah of kiddushin because he hariat mikudesh li be biyah zu kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. That Moshe v'Yisrael says the biyah that you're having now is not a biyah for kiddushin; it's a biyah of znut, and therefore you were never mikalesh this isha. And basically, they're retroactively suspending the kiddushin. You know, Rashi brings over here something that is a major controversy, and that leads into the Rambam as well, which is Rashi says over here. Some people explain that the Gemara's question over here is, Hatinach Kaspo, that works well for Kesef, because Kesef is only Kiddushin midrabanan. But Bia, which is Kiddushin d'oraita, how can you be okeret? So Rashi says that that assumption is that the Kesef Kiddushin is only a dinda rabanan, but Bia is the real Kiddushin midoraita. Why? Because the Gemara in Kiddushin, when it wants to learn out the ways that you can do Kiddushin, by the case of Bia, it says, Uba'aleha, that he comes on her, that means that he had biyah with her. So there it's pretty clear that the kuchin, or the kichat ha'isha, is associated with biyah. How do we know that kesef works for kiddushin? The Gemara has a gzeira shava of the kicha that is written by kiddushin, and the kicha that is written by Avraham buying his property from Ephron. When he buys the Marat HaMachpelah, over there it says lukuchin. And over there the lukuchin is based on a monetary transaction, money. So that's how we know that kiddushin works. The assumption of these opinions is that a gzeirah shava is only a din derabonan. So that when the Gemara here says a din kaspa, that comes through a gzeirah shava, that's only a din derabonan. But bio, which is a din deraita, how you oker it? Rashi says, v'ta'ut gadol hu biyadam, says that is the biggest mistake in the world, the kedushe kesef doraita ninu. The kedushe kesef is midoraita. Umi gzeirah shava de kicha kicha. They learn it out from Gzeirah Shavah Kicham Isdeafron, Gamar Lam, a second Kedushin. V'Gzeirah Shavah B'Sinai Nemra. Gzeirah Shavah comes Moshe Misinai. V'Chol Yugimu Midot. Rabbi Shmo, the whole 13 Midot, if you invoke them, that's a Din D'Oraita. Anything that's learned out from one of the Shlosh's Midot, even though it's not explicitly written in the Torah, is a Din D'Oraita. The right is not only things written in the Torah, there are things that are learned through the Shlosh Esrei Midot. Shlosh Esrei Midot, if you learn something out of the Torah through the Shlosh Esrei Midot, D'Oraita. That's a Din D'Oraita, not a Din D'Rabbanan. So Rashi says they don't know what they're talking about. And I'll prove it to you. Because what happens if a woman had Kiddushin with a man? Kesef. She's now an Arusa. She goes now as an Arusa and has an extramarital affair. She's Chayav Skilam in the Torah. And we would put her to death. How could you put her to death over Kesef Kiddushin if the Kiddushin is only Derabonon? You're going to put her to Mita, to Skila, over a Din Derabonon of Kiddushin? No way! It must prove that the Kesef Kiddushin is a Kiddushin D'Oraita. And that's why we're putting her to death, because she has an extramarital affair when she's in Arusa. So that's how Rashi proves it. So Rashi says that in the Gemara in Kiddushin, he quotes it from Rabutai, some Rebbeim, and he rejects it there, and over here he quotes it as well, and rejects it. The only difficulty is that Rambam says there are three ways to do Kiddushin. Shnayim mehen min haTorah, v'echad midivrei sofrim. Two of them are min haTorah, shtar and bi'ah. One of them is midivrei sofrim, kesef. The Ravid on the spot says, what is he talking about? The same way Rashi reacts, says, what is he talking about? That is a huge mistake. And this is a whole mistaken way of thinking. He said it's wrong, wrong, wrong. Just like Rashi says over here. Ravid says that Rambam's wrong. So that Rambam, when we learn the second Kiddushin, we'll see that this whole Machloket and that Rambam, if you do it Be'iyun and make a second Kiddushin on the first Daf, that's a major part of dealing with that Rambam. How do you deal with that Rambam? So the most common answer is that when the Rambam uses Divrei Sofrim, he doesn't mean Derabanan. Even though in many places he uses Divrei Sofrim to mean Rabbanan, there are other places in Mishnah Torah where he uses Divrei Sofrim to say that it's a limud that the Chamim brought that is D'Oraita. It's not to say that it's a Din Derabanan, it's saying that it's a D'Oraita din that's learned through a limud d'Rabbanan. That's what happens. By Kesef Kiddushin, the limud is from the Gemara. It's Torah Shebaal Peh. So when it's a limud mitorah Shebaal Peh that gets you a din d'Oraita, he sometimes calls that divrei sofrim. And that's how they answer for the Rambam. That's really d'Oraita, but it's a different form of d'Oraita. It's not d'Oraita that's written explicitly in the pasuk. It's a d'Oraita that comes from a derivation. Because there is Shoba. That he calls divrei sofrim, even though it doesn't mean it's d'Rabbanan. It means d'Oraita, but coming through the limud that the Chachamim gave to us. Right, that's where the answer for the Rambam. But he's aware that this Rashi is very important Rashi because of this. And then the Rambam and the Ravid have the same issue that's brought up over here. Alright, so now the Gemara dealt with this again by saying that the Rabbanan suspended his right to do Kiddushin both by Kesef and by Bia. Tashma. Next option. Amar Elazar ben Yaakov, Shemati, Shebeitin, Makin, Ba'onshin, Shalom, Min HaTorah. Beitin can punish people even though the Torah does not mandate it. V'lola avor al divrei Torah, not to violate the Torah, elo lasot siag the Torah, in order to protect the Torah. So even though what they're doing is a violation of the Torah, the reason they're doing it is to protect the Torah. It's equivalent to what Rabbi says about writing down Torah Shebapeh. Eit lasot l'ashem eferu Torah techa. Sometimes the goal is so great that it's worth violating a single mitzvah min haTorah in order to protect the whole Torah. So writing down Torah Shebapeh is a violation, but it protected Torah Shebapeh. Otherwise there would be no Torah Shebapeh. So there it's worth it. Okay, not for everybody to decide. It's for great, the leaders of the generation. So over here too. There's a case where a guy was riding a horse on Shabbat in the time of the Greeks. They viewed the Beitim. They brought him to Beitim and Saklu. And they stoned him. Not because he's deserving of Skila. Because they needed to do it in order to show and to make a stand. So now, what's the case here? Riding on a horse on Shabbat is only an Isur Min D'Rabbanan. It's in the Mishnah in Beitza. The Mishnah in Beitza says you're not allowed to ride on a horse because Shema Yiktuf. Maybe you're going to break off a branch to use as a goad for the animal. Or to use as a prod for the animal. So therefore, it's only an Isur D'Rabbanan to ride on a horse. Shvita Beima is not an Isur Skila. And then number two is that if Chay Noseh Atzmo, it might not be considered to be a problem of Shvita Beima because it might be not mean to be a Masa on top of the Beima. So, because of that, you have only an Isur D'Rabbanan, and yet we're putting him to death. Skila, putting him to death. How could they do that? The answer is because it was the times of the Greeks. There were many mityavnim. They were throwing away the Torah wholesale, throwing away the Dinei D'Rabbanan, everything wholesale. So Chamim said, we gotta make a stand. And this guy is violating the Shabbat in public. We gotta take a stand, even though it's a Din D'Rabbanan. And they punished him. As if it was a Din D'Oraita, to show that Shabbat is important. We don't just give up things. Then again, the shuv maaseh b'dam echad, shetiach b'ishto tachat ateina. Here was an individual who had relations with his wife under a fig tree, basically in public. V'yaviyu l'beitim b'ilku, they brought him to beitim and they gave him malkot. Lo mipnei sh'ro'ei l'kach, he didn't do anything wrong, it was his wife. He didn't do anything wrong, but because he did it in public, l'sha'at z'richa l'kach. They were acting so promiscuously, they were just acting freely where there was no sense of tzniut. The Chachamim said, you can't do that. We got to show people that that's considered to be unacceptable behavior. So they gave him a coat. Not because the Din D'oraita says so, but because the Rabbanan wanted to uphold the values of the Torah, tzniut. So you see here again that the Chachamim are punishing even though the Torah does not require it. And you're in violation of Dinei D'oraita. You're killing someone, and here you're hurting someone with Malkot, and yet we're doing it. Rav says, Migdar Milta Shaini. Same answer that we gave out by Eliyahu, out by Gehara Kamel, is Hashat Zrichalo. These are unique opportunities or moments where the Chachamim determined that it's worth doing this in order to uphold the Torah. And without this, we're not going to be able to uphold the Torah. So they do it as a one-time thing. It's not a power that's given to them in order to permanently change things in the Torah. It's a one-time exception to the rule where they go ahead and do this in order to protect the Torah. But we're not going to extrapolate from that you can do it all the time. Okay, that's where we leave off in terms of our proofs for our Oker Devar Min HaTorah. And therefore we are unsuccessful at bringing a proof to this fact that they're Oker Devar Min HaTorah. And again, by the case of Trumah, Torah and Trumah Tmeah, over there we said before that Tosfot explained that you can't use Hefker Beit in Hefker because in the end we're making him take off again. We're saying it's not Trumah and you have to take it off again. If you say Hefker Beit in Hefker, it's not his. It's not his, he wouldn't have to take off Trumah again. So that can't work as the answer. And you also can't say Shev V'Altaseh. You can't say Shev V'Altaseh by Trumah because in that case, when they suspend the need for Trumah over there, that's not a Shev V'Altaseh because now he's going to take the Trumah, he's going to eat it. Zarim are going to eat it. He's going to make it Tamei, which are all sore with regards to Trumah, and they're going to be actively engaging with this Trumah that the Chachamim say is not Trumah anymore. In addition to that, you can't invoke Hefker Beit Din Hefker because then the cause the Kohen a loss. Because when you say Hefker Beit Din Hefker and it's as if there's nothing there, then the Kohen loses out in that case. But why are you penalizing the Kohen that he loses out when this guy did something wrong? So in all these cases, we don't have a precedent for what Rav Chisda tried to establish, which is reversing a Din D'oraita. Again, we'd find plenty of these cases. Reversing Dinei D'oraita, violating Dinei D'oraita. But each one of them has a principle that is established. Hefker Beit Din Hefker, Shev V'Altaseh, Migdar Milta, all of these things that come up. None of those are applicable by the Trumah Tmeah and the Trumah Tehorah. And therefore, Rav Chisda is left at a loss for finding a precedent for this at the Chachamim Oker Devar Min HaTorah. Right now, we continue with the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, V'lo b'zeh b'zeh mitamim la. Since both husbands have to divorce her, they are Kohanim. If both husbands were Kohanim, if she passes away, they cannot become Tameh for her. That they are, even though they're husbands, so how is that? Because Minola, how do you know that? Dichtiv imki im l'sheroa karov elav. Kohen is not allowed to come to me except for his relatives that are close to him. Ve'amar mar, and we have an explanation on that. Shero zo ishto. The shero is his wife. Dichtiv, and it says lo itama bal be'amav le'echalo. A husband may not become to me to profane himself. So one pasuk says that he's allowed to become to me. One pasuk says he's not allowed to become to me. Now, in terms of Shero being Ishto, it's not the simple pshat of the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Kiyim l'shero akarov elav, except for his relatives, and then the Torah lets out the relatives, the seven relatives that you have to become Tamei for and that you have to sit a velot for, are mother, father, brother, sister, son, daughter. Those are the six, and they're enumerated there in the Pasuk. So the Pashtun of Pasuk is Shero is referencing those people that are mentioned afterwards, which are the six relatives. What the Chachamim say is, no, Shero is a separate entity called Ishto. And Ishto, you're chayav in avelut for Ishto, and you can become tamei for Ishto. Again, we saw yesterday that Rambam believes that that is only a din d'rabbanan, and it's not smachta min hakra. The Ramban and many of the other Rishonim believe it's a din d'oraita, that a kohen can become tamei for his wife. But the Shero is being taken to not mean relative here, but to be the closest relative. And the closest relative is his wife, Shero zu Ishto. But now we have one pasuk saying that the Baal becomes tamei for his wife. One pasuk says that a baal is not allowed to become tamei for his wife. So how do we do that? So yesh baal shemitamei, yesh baal sheino mitamei. There is a husband who becomes tamei, and there's a husband that doesn't become tamei. Ha ketzad? How do you solve that problem? Mitamei hu l'ishto kshira, veino mitamei l'ishto psula. He's allowed to become tamei for his wife when she's kshira, but when his wife is a psula, he cannot become tamei to her. And over here, of course, with the second husband, she's clearly a psula.
And even for the first husband, even though she's his wife, but since the Chachamim demanded that he divorce her, that's considered to be psula. Neither of them get the right to the things that she finds. Time am I. What's the reason? Amur Rabbanan Mitziati Shalabala. What is the reason that the Chachamim said that whenever a woman finds, goes to her husband? So that there won't be any jealousy, acrimony between them. If she's keeping her own bank account, she's keeping her own things. So we say everything goes to the husband. So over here, we'd rather they be angry and they have a discord between them because we're trying to get them divorced. So if the whole idea of giving the mitziyah to the husband is protect against divorce, here we want a divorce. So we're going to say to him, don't get the mitziyah, so it causes or puts a wedge between them. He's not entitled to her output. Time am I, Amrei Rabbanan Maaseh Yadeh Labalo. Why is a woman's output given to her husband? Mishum Tgachla Mizone. Because he feeds her, he takes care of her. Meaning that is a pari passu that he feeds her and she gives him her output. That's the value that's being exchanged here at Mitna'e Ktuba. That he takes care of her and she gives him Maaseh Yadayim. How could given to Mizone Leila? Over here we already said in the Mishnah that Mizonot are suspended for her. Maaseh Yadeh Lavdi Day. Therefore he's not entitled to her Maaseh Yadayim. Tosafot over here raises the problem of why is it by Mitziyat Isha that it's connected to Eva and that Maaseh Yadeh are connected to Mizonot, because we see in other places that it's just the opposite. The Mizonot are connected to Eva and the Mitziyah is connected to Maaseh Yadeh. So Tosafot says that it actually both of them apply to both. The reasons are both. There's a reason of Eva and the exchange applies to both of these issues, Maaseh Yadayim. But once you do that, you still have to explain why the Gemara assigned Eva to Mitziyah and assigned Maaseh Yadeh to Mizonot. And so why does it separate them out? That the Tosfos leaves Bitzarach Yun. Okay, Lo Mefer Nedarah, he doesn't have a right to nullify her Nedarim. Taima Maya Marachmana Baal Mefer. Why did the Torah allow the husband to nullify the Nedarim of the woman? Kadesh Lo Tidgano. So in order that she should not become disgusting to her husband, she takes a nether, I'm not taking a bath anymore, I'm not taking a shower anymore. She takes a nether, I'm not putting on makeup anymore. Meantime, that affects her husband. And now she's not going to be taking a shower, she's not going to be putting on makeup, it's going to be disgusting for her husband. So her husband's granted the right to reverse that so that his wife remains appealing to him. So there, we want to prevent there being discord or problems in the marriage, so the Torah says the husband has the right to nullify those nidarim. Hocha titgana vititgana. Over here, let her become disgusting. Let her become unappealing to him. Because over here, we're trying to get them divorced. So we're not going to give him the rights to do something that is done to prevent him not liking his wife. Because over here, we don't want him to like his wife. And therefore, we suspend his right to be mefer nidareha. And this goes back to the Tosafot we discussed yesterday, where hafarat nidarim is really midoraita. So what do you mean? What's the reason it can be mefer nidarim? So the way that the Tosafot explained yesterday is that the Chachamim extended the Din d'oraita, and then their extension of the Din d'oraita, they gave a reason for what their extension was, and then once we had that reason, we overlay it on the Din d'oraita, and that's what's happening over here. What's the reason for Avarat Nidarim, Midrabanan? And we're going to apply that to the Din d'oraita of Avarat Nidarim. Aita Bat Yisrael Nifsala Min Akuna. If she is an Israelite woman, she's now a Zona, and she's Pesula Min Akuna, because she had an extramarital affair. Yes, it was unintentional. Yes, she didn't know. But she's now a Zona, and therefore she's Psula Min Akuna, because she had Bia with someone who was not really up for her. Mar says, Pshito. Of course she's Psula the Kona, because she's a Zona. So Mar says, Bat Levi Min Amatzer Itztrichalei. We had to teach us that a Bat Levi in this situation will lose out her right to go back to Maser. Uvat Levi Min Amatzer Mi Mifsula B'Znut. Since when is a Zona change the status of a woman regarding maser? Zonah is a problem for Kohanim. So therefore, a Kohen cannot marry a Zonah, and a Bat Kohen who becomes a Zonah cannot go back to her father's house for Chuma. Levi or Bat Levi doesn't have any din. A Levi is allowed to marry a Zonah, and a Bat Levi who becomes a Zonah is not suspended from maser. And as Tosafot points out, even according to Rabbi Meir, who says that Maaser Rishon is Asur L'Zarim, he would agree that a Zonah, or a Bat Levi that's a Zonah, is not suspended from Maaser, because she's no worse than a Levi who can marry a Zonah. So why should she be suspended in this case? Batanyo, Leviya Shnishbet, Oshin Nivala, Bilad Znot, a Bat Levi who was taken into captivity, and the assumption here is that her captors took advantage of her, Or she has a biatz not. Notim la maser bochelet. She's allowed to continue to get the maser. So amarav sheshet knasa. That's a knas midrabanan. Rabbanan made a knas that a bat levi will lose out on her maser. These are part of the chumrot that they hichmiru b'sofa in order to make sure that she does the right thing up front. So here they suspended her right to get maser. Even though minatorah she has the right to get it, nevertheless they suspended her right here to take maser because of what transpired. So even though she technically is muteret to eat it, and a zar could eat it, nevertheless, the chamim suspended her right over here, and they took away her right to have maser. Or you have to say it's like Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir who thinks that maser is a surah zarim, and then the chamim made her like a zar, and that's why she can't eat the maser over here. Bat kohen mina chuma, a bat kohen cannot eat chuma. So over there again, ma chidush here. She's a zona. Of course she's suspended from eating chuma. She can't go back to her father's house. And says, afilu b'truma derabanan. Even in truma derabanan, she's suspended. You would think maybe she's only out on truma d'oraita, because if already we're being kones a bat levi on maser, certainly by truma, you're not going to say truma d'oraita, she's going to be allowed to eat it. So it's clear that truma d'oraita she's suspended from. So the chiddush here is that she's also suspended from truma derabanan. Ben yoshim shel zeh, v'yoshav shel zeh, yoshim tubata. In this case, the inheritors of either of the two husbands will not collect her ketubah. It says, ketubah, mavito. Her ketubah, she doesn't get a ketubah. The Mishnah says that she loses her ketubah from the first husband, and she loses her ketubah from the second husband. So then, where are the yorshim? Where are the inheritors that are coming to take her ketubah? Amra papa ketubat binin dichrin. We're talking about a tnai ketubah, which is that the male children will inherit the mother. The problem here is that a father gives over his daughter to marriage. We want the father to give her a generous dowry into the marriage. Fear that the father has is that if his daughter predeceases her husband will inherit her. Her husband may take another wife afterwards, may have multiple wives at the same time, and he has many, many sons. And if the husband inherits this woman, the property or the dowry that the father gave into the marriage now will be distributed amongst all this man's sons, even from other women. And he's going to say, what? I don't want to give this in here so that this guy can give over to all of his children who have nothing to do with me. They're not my grandchildren. They're only a subset of them that are my grandchildren. So in order to prevent that problem from happening, the Chachamim established something called Ketubat Binin Dichrin, which is that when the wife predeceases the husband inherits her. But then when the husband dies, her children have a first right to take out the value of her Ketubah. So when he comes up to breaking up the estate, all their mothers predeceased their father, then each of those children will take out the value of the ketubah that was owed to their mother, and then whatever's left over, they'll split. Assuming there's something left over. If there's nothing left over, then there is no ketubah binin dichrin. But as long as there's some residual after each one of them collects their mother's ketubah, then you divide the rest equally. So via the Chachamim institutes ketubah binin dichrin, so that fathers would be generous in their giving to their daughters a dowry, because they know for certain it'll only end up with their grandchildren, not with this man's other children. So what they're saying over here is, Tubat binin dichrin is what we're saying they don't get. Gemara says, pshita. That's also pshita over here. If there's no ketubah, then where's their ketubat binin dichrin? Why are they collecting her ketubah when she can't even collect her ketubah? Gemara says, madu tema da avda yisura tu'a rabbonon. In the case here, she is the one who did the violation. So over there, we penalize her and take away her ketubah. Lizara, her children, who didn't do anything wrong, Lokansu Rabbanan. Maybe the Rabbanan over there were not punishing them and allowed them to collect her ketubah. Even though she couldn't collect it, they can collect it because they did nothing wrong. We're not going to penalize them. Kamash Malon, that's not the case. Once we suspended her ketubah, we suspended it permanently, and then even her children will not collect that ketubah inside of this ketubat binin dichrin. Achiv shel zeh chotzim elo miyamin. Each of the brothers, meaning that if either of her husbands passed away, the first husband or the second husband, and now the brothers of those husbands have to deal with her as a yavam, because she doesn't have any children. So now, achiv shel mishon chaleitz midoraita. The brother of the first husband has to do chalitza min haTorah, because she's really married to that first husband, and now she's up for yibum with him, so he does chalitza midoraita. V'lo mi'abe midorabanan. Midorabanan, the chachamim took away their right to do yibum over here, because of the knas, that the chachamim wanted to be machmir on her, that she has nothing afterwards. Nothing includes, if she falls to Yibum, she won't be able to marry this guy, it'll only be Chalitza. On the other hand, when it comes to the brother of the second husband, Achim Shoshini, there she was never married to him. So there's no din of chalitza or yibam min haTorah. Therefore, he's chaleitz mid rabbanan. He does chalitza with her mid rabbanan, so people don't think that she divorced the first husband, married the second husband, and now she's going free without chalitza. So we make him do chalitza in order to prevent that misunderstanding. Velo miyabeim lo midoraita lo midorabanan. And he doesn't do yibam with her, not min haTorah, not mid rabbanan, because there's no chiyuv of yibam min haTorah. She was never married to his brother. So therefore, there's no din of yibam min haTorah vis-a-vis this brother. In addition to that, the Rabbanan don't let him marry her because mid rabbanan, we say do chalitza and not yibum. Okay, we'll stop here. 14 lines down on Tzadi Aleph, Amud Aleph.